Welcome to Beethoven, Crisis and Creativity from Valley Public Radio in collaboration with the Fresno Philharmonic and the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series. I'm David Allison. Joining us today are Ray Hatoda, Music Director of the Fresno Philharmonic, and our special guest today, pianist Charlie Albright. Charlie was the first classical pianist in the Harvard College New England Conservatory five-year ABMM joint program, completing a bachelor's degree as an economics major and pre-med student at Harvard, and a master of music degree in piano performance at New England Conservatory, and he graduated with a prestigious artist diploma from the Juilliard School. Ray Hatoda, we're going to start with one of the most well-known and most beloved pieces in the piano literature.
That's right, the Moonlight Sonata, Opus 27, number 2. And before we get to that, I do want to say something about Beethoven, because I've been having discussions with my colleagues, musicians all around the world, and we are still celebrating Beethoven's 250th birthday. But why? You know, in a time when we're asked to stay apart, right? Charlie, you haven't concertized probably since...
I was trying to remember the last time I think I was on a flight was probably the end of January or something. And yeah. The concerts kind of just all shut down in mainly March, right?
Right. And so in a time when we're asked to stay apart, not perform live music for our audiences, music, I think, is the catalyst that keeps us together during this difficult time. So while the future might seem unsure, and we're trying to navigate all these challenging times as musicians and artists, I think we have to really stay focused on the undercurrent of what we must focus on. And right now, Beethoven really gives us that energy and that spirit and that motive, you know, because during his time, he suffered quite a lot. And while he was writing these pieces that we're going to talk about today, the Moonlight Sonata and the Beethoven Concerto No. 3, he was really suffering many ailments, but one that was really such an incredible moment in his life when he realized that he was going deaf. I mean, it was really a crisis for him. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. But Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about the iconic piece of Beethoven's, other than I think Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, is the Moonlight Sonata. I know that you performed this piece on the Lorenz Keyboard Series in 2015 in Fresno. Can you recall that moment? You were sitting down at the concert hall and you were performing for all this, the live audience. Can you tell me what that was like?
It was, I mean, the piece is magical. I always kind of joke around that the Moonlight Sonata is so overplayed that it kind of stopped being played for quite a long time. I also joke that it's on every like 50 greatest hits of classical music CD and like every gas station across the country because it's so iconic. And I think the piece, the way it's written is such that every time you play it, something new comes out that you don't necessarily have realized in previous times, right? And of course, being in front of a live audience makes that magic even the more powerful. So, you know, it starts off with that. The left hand basically does nothing the entire piece except for play an octave. It gives the foundation of the piece, kind of the root that the rest is built off of. And then the right hand just has that three-note broken chord. Da, da, da. I'm not going to sing, you all leave. But the three-note broken chord that just continuously. And then you hear in the pinky a very simple repeated note that's repeated a total of three times. A bum, ba, bum. And it has this sense of desperation, this underlying pain. And maybe it goes back to what you're talking about, all the turmoil that Beethoven was going through while he was composing this and the realization that he may be going deaf. Or it has this underlying sense of tragedy and at the same time maintains a simple kind of beauty. So it has like these, it's the juxtaposition, if you will, of this simple beauty and this utmost tragedy.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that. You were describing this new kind of way of writing. I think it sounds romantic. And when we think of romantic, what is that? You know? And so when we're looking at the actual title of Opus 27, actually there's two Opus 27s. There's the first one, Opus 27, number one, which is a totally different way that Beethoven was writing piano sonatas. Prior to that, it was always, you know, four or three movements. It was very classical, very Haydn and Mozart influenced, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And then Opus 27, he's like, no, I'm going to do something completely different. And so both of those Opus 27 has this Fantasia quality. And it even says, right, in Opus 27, number 2, Fantasia quasi sonata. So it's kind of a fantasy, kind of a sonata. And when we think of fantasy, it's like for Beethoven's time, this was revolutionary. This was so different. And then to start the piece, the Moonlight Sonata, in this moody-like way, like you were saying, the arpeggios, and it's not much of a melody even. But when we hear the first four measures, we're like, oh, that's the Moonlight Sonata.
Absolutely.
And we attribute it to emotion rather than here's a piano sonata from the classical period. And for Beethoven at that time, this was his way to break out of the form of sonata, to break out into his own voice and into his own way of expression. And I think more than ever, during this time when we're not able to perform, we're trying new things, you know? We're trying to break out and redefine what classical music and Beethoven means to us. And what do you feel about Beethoven now, as opposed to a year ago? What if you were to sit down and play the Moonlight Sonata next week for a live audience? How would that feel to you now?
I'm actually scheduled to play a socially distanced concert in a few weeks, and I will be playing the Moonlight Sonata. And one of the reasons I chose to play this there is because of everything that's going on. I think the piece now is more applicable than maybe it has been in a very long time. As you're saying, it's the lack of the technical craziness that a lot of his other sonatas often start with. We attribute that simplicity to maybe emotion. And I think it allows that emotion to shine through maybe in ways that other pieces couldn't, that have a lot more technical flourishes. Because technically, at least the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata is really simple. You're barely playing very many notes at all. So it's what's between the notes, the spaces in between them, what you do with the few notes that you're to play, that you can hopefully express something and communicate an emotion, that sense of tragedy and beauty at the same time to the audiences.
Yes. And so can we talk about that first movement and who it's dedicated to?
Sure.
We think of Beethoven as this gruff, impossible, very curmudgeon-like composer, very socially inept. But I really think it was a lot of the ailments that he was going through, physical ailments. Doctors have said that he had tinnitus and that he had this ringing ear, and it was his gastrointestinal issues. And there have been lots of speculation about his health. But Beethoven was someone who loved, like all of us. He had a love. He had several loves, actually. And the first one was Giulietta Guicciardi, who was a piano student of his, and he dedicated this Moonlight Sonata to her. So when you're playing it, do you think of that at all? Or
I don't think I necessarily think of his love when I perform it, but every time I do play it, I do realize other aspects that come out, if that makes sense. So I'm sure that, you know, now that when I play the piece, and probably especially when I play it in front of an audience in a few weeks, all that has happened this year, this very crazy year that everyone has had, that'll become applicable in the piece. Your interpretation definitely changes as you play it, as events unfold, as you go through life experiences. So the way I play it now is definitely very different than the way I played it probably at the Philip Lorenz Memorial Concert Series there 5 years ago. And I'm sure that if I play it again in 10 or 20 years, it'll be different still.
Right.
I think when musicians perform, their experiences and perspectives affect how they share the music. And I think that's one of the magical joys of performance, is that it is a malleable, changing thing. And it's not the same way twice. If I record something a few years ago, the way I play it now will probably be, and probably should be, different than 3 years ago or whatever, because of the changes that everyone goes through.
Let's listen now as Charlie Albright performs the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata.
Thank you.
That was pianist Charlie Albright performing the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. This is Beethoven, Creativity and Crisis from Valley Public Radio. We're speaking with special guest Charlie Albright and Ray Hotoda, music director of the Fresno Philharmonic.
We start off with this hypnotic, this mournful, sad, contemplative, again, this very emotional first movement. But then tell us what happens after that in the second movement.
So the second movement is super short. I mean, it's probably, I mean, depending if you play the repeats or not, it could be less than a minute long. I mean, it's very short. It's like this little minuet. I almost think of it as a transition between the first and the third. So the first movement, you've got this desperation that's expressed in this utter simplicity, right? In terms of technically, but it has that eerie beauty about it. The second movement comes along and it's almost as if like you can almost picture a small child playing in a little flower field or something. It's very innocent. It's very innocent. It's very simple. It's very kind.
Now Charlie Albright performs the brief second movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. That was pianist Charlie Albright performing the second movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Charlie and Ray Hotoda continue our discussion.
The first movement showed desperation, but it was a very introverted, personal type of desperation. The third movement is as if it's desperation, but it's expressed in the polar opposite way. It's this utter outpouring of raw fury and emotion. And it's a hoot to play, too.
Right. And so like, I think the sonata isn't very long. I believe it's like under 20 minutes, correct? The whole thing?
I think so. Yeah.
And so you go from sorrow to this innocent joy to this like frenetic energy, that this urgency, this defiance that we think of Beethoven, and this push again to go beyond what you can do. And it is like an Olympic sprint, last movement. And what it is just arpeggios going all from the bottom all the way up to the keyboard.
And over and over again.
Over and over again in different keys. And, you know, I was thinking of all the different pianists, legendary Beethoven expert pianists, and I think of Arthur Schnabel. And when I recently listened to it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is an old scratchy LP recording that's on YouTube right now. And it's so super fast. So here I get my metronome out, you know, because I have to analyze this, you know, to see how fast is it really actually going.
Is it on fast forward?
Yeah, right. Is it on like, you know, what is it when you can digitally manipulate the speed? But no, this was quarter note equals 174.
Oh, wow.
And one of my other favorite Beethoven pianists is Richard Good.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I clocked him too.
You know? Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, and Ray.
I know.
This is what you do when you're bored.
I know. This is the piano geek in me.
Sure.
And I clocked him at 176 to the quarter note.
Oh, wow.
Again, it's like this, whoever you are playing this movement, what you're thinking of, what you're driving at, in your own emotional state as you're performing it. Because, I mean, you can practice it as much as you want, but when you're in performance mode, there's this energy happening with you and the audience.
Charlie Albright now performs the exciting third movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. That was pianist Charlie Albright performing the rousing third movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. This is Beethoven, Creativity and Crisis from Valley Public Radio.
Tell us a little bit about your performances of Beethoven and your relationship with Beethoven, really.
One of the most common questions I ever get, who's your favorite composer? Or like, what's your favorite piece to play?
Right.
And for me, you know, I love Beethoven. I love particularly late Beethoven and Chopin. I kind of love that period where it goes from classical to late classical into the romantic period of music. So I usually answer, usually Beethoven and Chopin are some of my favorite composers. And I think it is that reason. It's because of all the emotion he's able to put, but it's also in that very, well, it starts as classical, which I really appreciate and like, but it goes into that more schmaltzy, that's a good word to use to describe romantic music, but I think it's people usually get the idea that schmaltziness that he can get out of it. And again, this piece is kind of starting to transition into that. There's so much classical about it, but it still has a very romantic feel to it that a lot of his earlier sonatas just didn't have. And so when you're playing it, especially the last movement with that utter outpouring of energy, of fury, it becomes like, I used the word drive, I think, and you basically have to drive the piece, give it that direction. Because if you play it too slow, if you play it without that sense of direction, then it can become very ploppy. You know, it becomes like, oh, what's the point? You're just kind of like, you know, like a horse going through mud or something, right? And so that direction is very important to have. And then the other interesting thing about that movement in particular, I think, is almost the entire thing is very loud. So when you're performing it, you obviously can't max out at the beginning. You still have to have a place to go to give that, you know, that sense of shape and cohesiveness in the piece. Right. And so there's still a sense of restraint that you have to give so that you don't max out early and have nowhere to go for the, you know, other 7 minutes of the piece or however long it is. And so that's another tricky aspect I found.
Right. And I think emotionally, the whole gamut that he expresses in just one piece, you know, from this somber quality to this frenetic energy, as a pianist, you kind of have to, like you were saying, you have to be an athlete, you know, you have to pace yourself, right? and put yourself in those modes of expression and feeling that are so diverse in that one 15-minute piece or 16-minute sonata.
It's very draining emotionally, that piece. Certain pieces you can play and, you know, maybe they're physically exerting. There's a lot of physical exertion involved, or maybe others are very simple and there's more showy pieces that maybe aren't quite as deep, if you will. It's just kind of a show piece. But this one, it's a very emotionally draining piece because I think, as you know, as we're kind of getting at, it has that whole gamut of emotion. And a lot of them are very deep emotion, tragedy, desperation, beauty, innocence. And when you go through all of that in 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever that is, you know, you have to really put a lot into it, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the words you just used, tragedy, desperation, beauty. I think of these last 6 months, 7 months, and we've really, all of us have endured all of those things during this time of the coronavirus. And how we've overcome those, how we've woken up every day and practiced 8 hours on the piano or whatever you're doing right
now.
Not
me. Not 8 hours. I don't know what you're doing right now. Not eight for me.
But I mean, preparing for this recital you have in 2 weeks, which I'm sure you're feeling so much anticipation for. You've been waiting to perform since January, really. And I'm sure you've really encompassed all of those emotions from just that one piece that he wrote, you know, almost 200 years ago.
Hopefully. We'll see how it goes at the concert. Times are so uncertain, especially for musicians, as you're saying, you know, you don't really, you're practicing, but oftentimes you kind of wonder why, right? Like, what am I working toward? Because a lot of times, especially this past year, well, you work for a concert and, you know, you're not sure if it's going to happen or not because everything changes day by day. And then maybe a few weeks before, then that gets canceled. And then, okay, well, what's the next one up there? You start preparing for that and maybe that falls through. So, you know, you want to avoid getting into the mindset of, oh, you know, what's the point? But, you know, sometimes it's hard not to, right? Because you work for something and then if it doesn't happen, then it's like, well, so you got to just keep at it, I guess.
Yes. I do want to talk about Beethoven's Heiligenstadt Testament. And I want to refer to it right at this point because I think during this time, he was writing these two pieces, the Moonlight Sonata and also the Piano Concerto No. 3, which we're going to talk about next. He wrote this testament that was not discovered until after his death in 1827. But he wrote it around this time that he was writing these two pieces, 1802. It was a testament to his brother saying how much he was suffering with his sense of feeling that he knew he was going to be completely deaf very soon. And the frustration that he felt as an artist, as a musician, to have that one sense be completely gone, really by the time he was in his 30s, when he wrote this testament. So it's such an important document that really changes the way Beethoven writes music after this. After he wrote this testament, he said, you know, I am really suffering. I'm really dealing with this loss of hearing to the point where I'm suicidal, but I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to make music and I'm going to overcome this horrendous suffering and continue to make music. And I think of Beethoven from this time on, he really revolutionized music. You know, if it weren't for Beethoven, we wouldn't have Hector Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, you know, which was written really only 3 years after his death, 1830. And so all of this suffering that he went through, and he wrote this testament saying, look, I am going to move forward. I am determined to overcome this. All of his music after that was just phenomenal and incredible. So knowing this, that the composer was suffering through all this, this was going through this dark, dark drama, the drama of the C minor piano concerto came forth. So can you tell us a little bit about, Charlie, about the piano concerto number 3, which you've played?
Absolutely. It's a beautiful piece. He wrote five concertos, or five proper concertos, official ones. He has other pieces that for piano and orchestra, but this is the middle one, number 3. It's a 3-movement concerto, and it's an interesting one because we were kind of talking about how the Moonlight Sonata was kind of, you can kind of hear some of the old style of Beethoven, but also some of the newer things that he was experimenting with, moving forward toward more romantic style stuff. The third concerto is very similar as well. So you still have a lot of the runs and arpeggios that, you know, a lot of his earlier pieces had, but you see a lot of the drama, a lot of the kind of hints at romanticism that he's kind of moving toward that you get even more in maybe, you know, the fifth concerto or something. So it's the first and third movements are, you know, much more up, much faster in tempo, kind of standard. The second movement's very slow and kind of personal. It's a difficult piece, but it's a lot of, it's very dramatic and it's fun. I love playing it.
Well, you know what I love is the very opening, right? It's in C minor, which of course we know the Fifth Symphony also starts in C minor, but this dark, ominous, you know, just this triad, right, of C minor going up and down. And I know that there are documents about it being influenced by Mozart's C minor piano concerto, and it does have that sort of feeling as well. So if you listen to Mozart's piano concerto number 24 in C minor and compare it to the Beethoven C minor piano concerto number 3, it does have a little bit of similarity, but I think Beethoven goes beyond, right? Like you were saying, Charlie, goes beyond the classical period and really puts forth this incredible dark first movement. You don't hear the piano for about 5 minutes into the concerto.
I always think I should bring out like a drink or, you know, set it on the piano and just hang out and wait for them to all finish playing. And then the first thing I do is start off with a C minor scale, right?
Just, right.
Well, three of them or something.
I know. And it's like, okay, so we hear this beautiful orchestral tutti for 5 minutes while the pianist is sitting there. And then it's like Beethoven is pissed off. He's like, what? No, I'm going to play this scale, you know, this C minor scale going up the piano 3 times. Here I am. It's like proclamation point for him, you know, it's a burst of creative energy. And when we have these stories, these apocryphal stories about the premiere of this piano concerto, they say that it was barely finished. The solo part was barely written out. And poor page turner didn't know when to turn the pages during the premiere. Because there was nothing written on the pages. And Beethoven was improvising, you know, most of it as he was playing it in the premiere. I mean, can you imagine that? I would have been loved to have been a fly on the wall for that premiere. But I know, Charlie, that you are an improviser. Can you tell us a little bit about, not that you dabble in improvising, but you actually write your own cadenzas on the spot as if you were Beethoven?
I love improvising. For the first several years of me playing piano, I didn't know how to read music. So I didn't do classical music. I had several teachers. One was a lady who lived on the corner who was about 90-some back then, played the accordion. She didn't read music either. She taught me by ear. And I went to the local piano and organ store in my small town in Centralia, Washington. And the lady there, Joanne, would teach me, you know, Great Balls of Fire on the organ, and we'd improvise and go back and forth between that. So I was taking from a jazz teacher for a while when I was about 6 or 7, I think about 7 years old or so. And he told my parents that I should have a year's worth of classical training for technique. And then I could come back to the, what I called the fun stuff, the fun songs. And so I started with Nancy Adsit, and I ended up staying mainly with classical music, but I kept improvising for fun, whether it's playing other people's pieces or making up my own. So maybe, I don't know, several seasons ago, many seasons ago, I started thinking, well, as I was, you know, giving concerts, why not incorporate improvisation into concerts? So if I'm doing a solo concert, I'll sit and make a piece of music, maybe 10 minutes long from notes from the audience. Or if I'm, you know, giving a concert with a concerto, I'll improvise the cadenza. And so I started doing it, and it's been a lot of fun. And it's something that was actually done a lot back in the day as well. You know, it wasn't until Beethoven started kind of, he was kind of the point where some cadenza started to be written out. There had been previous versions in the past. Maybe Mozart had some cadenzas, I believe, that he wrote. But the vast majority of cadenzas up until a certain point were all, everything's written out, and then there's a blank spot. And then the pianist or the violinist, whoever the soloist, they go off and play for 5 minutes. And then at the end, the orchestra comes back in with them and they end the piece. But it's become kind of a lost art in a way. There's not a whole ton of people who improvise. So I always loved it. So I started doing it and been a lot of fun.
Do you do that for like an encore or cocktail parties where you just say, okay, give me a few notes and I'll improvise 5 minutes on it?
Oh, usually I just do it at, in my concerts. I'll program it in like an improvisation. And other times I'll have an entire concert that's, you know, hour and a half long where I'll just improvise a sonata and a series of pieces or something. So the entire concert can be improvised as well.
Wow. And when you're improvising, do you say, okay, I'm going to do Beethoven-like sonata, quasi fantasia, you know? Or do you say, or do you just ask the audience to say, what form would you like me to do it in?
So I used to just come up with something on my own. And a couple mentors of mine who are in New York, they recommended years, this is years ago, they go, Charlie, instead of coming up with something on your own, what you should do is each time you're doing this in a concert is ask random audience members for random notes, use those random notes as the basis of a random melody and use that to make a hopefully not so random sounding piece of music. And that way, they said, people won't think you're cheating, you know, playing something that you practiced ahead of time and are just kind of spinning off as an improv. So I usually do that. And it's a lot of fun because I think audience members, then they'll start listening for what they recommended and they'll hear it. And they also know that you're not faking it. But in terms of the style, I usually pick a style that I kind of like. And again, as I said, I like the classical into romantic style. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that over the years, the more I do it, the more I kind of, I don't know, if I'm starting to kind of develop my own style that I tend to improvise most often in. And it kind of falls somewhere in that romantic slash maybe late classical period. So,
well, it's interesting because during Beethoven's time, Vienna's population was 200,000 at that time. And there were about 300 professional pianists and 6,000 piano students at that time. Oh, wow. Throughout Vienna. And so improvising was this huge competition. And of course, Beethoven had to enter every competition. And of course, he won all of them. Imagine if we had an improvisation competition that was like a side note of a major piano competition, you know, worldwide piano competition, to see who would improvise the best. That would be very interesting, I think.
That could be interesting.
Well, let's go back to the piano concerto number 3. And I want to talk about that last movement. As we're talking about improvisation, I just feel that this movement, the Rondo in particular, lends itself to so much improvisation. You know, basically, you have a theme, and then there's this flourish cadenza, so to speak, that the pianist does, and then the orchestra comes back in. And it kind of hold these cadenza type connections hold this rondo together.
Isn't it fun to match up the orchestra, right, with the pianist just doing this random run up there? You have to get it exactly right. I feel for the conductors. I don't know how you do it, Ray.
I know. It's so much fun, though. It's like, can I get in this time? And each time it's like, yes, I got it. I nailed it. But it's so playful. And right away at the beginning, he has these, you know, he has the melody, but then he has these offbeats, sforzandos, like he's jabbing at you, right? Bum, 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 bum. And it's so virtuosic. And so, you know, like we were talking about, it sounds so improvised. And then, so the third movement starts in C minor.
Yes.
But ends in this playful C major with the winds. And it's like this clown-like ending, this presto, where, you know, there's offbeats and then there's like these grace notes played by the winds that sound like, you know, little, like someone's trying to tickle you type of thing, you know?
On the offbeats, right?
Yes. And you think, gosh, is this the same Beethoven that wrote the last movement of the Moonlight Sonata, that tempestuous, dark, Sturm und Drang composer? And then we hear this delightful last movement of the piano concerto.
Almost sounds like Haydn at the very end, doesn't it?
Yeah. And
it's like that kind of clowning, joking tomfoolery, right?
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned Haydn, because he did study with Haydn. I think it was like 6 months. And he said, I'm done. You know, I'm done studying with this master. I'm going to move on. And so, and so, you know, from then on, he wrote, what did he write? He wrote all these piano sonatas. I mean, Haydn wrote, what, 52 piano sonatas?
A lot of them, something like that.
Yeah. And then Beethoven's like, okay, I'm going to write 32 piano sonatas, and they're going to be really, really different, really starting from the Moonlight Sonata. After that, so much development in the piano sonatas, really pushing the form, again, pushing against the norm, pushing against the framework of the classical period. But even in this last movement, in the coda of the third piano concerto, he's like making fun of Haydn in a way, saying, yes, okay, it sounds like Haydn, but it's a little bit kind of like poking at you, you know?
Let's listen to the third movement of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor, Opus 37. Pianist Awadhajan Pratt performs with the Fresno Philharmonic in a concert recorded January 2018 at the Soroyan Theater in Fresno. That was pianist Awadhajan Pratt in the third movement of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor with the Fresno Philharmonic, led by music director Ray Hotoda, from a concert recorded January 28, 2018 in Fresno.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for this wonderful conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
And I hope that you stay well and that you persevere and you have a fabulous concert, and good luck with the Moonlight Sonata. I hope the audiences love it. I'm sure they will.
Hope so. Thank you so much.
This has been Beethoven, Creativity and Crisis, a special series by Valley Public Radio together with the Fresno Philharmonic and the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series. Thanks to Ray Hotoda, music director of the Fresno Philharmonic, and Andreas Wertz of the Philip Lorenz International Keyboard Concert Series. Thanks also to Stephen Wilson, president and CEO of the Fresno Philharmonic. And of course, thank you to all the members of the Fresno Philharmonic for their outstanding musicianship and dedication. Most of all, thank you to our special guest, pianist Charlie Albright, for sharing his passion and insight. Next week, we welcome pianist John Nakamatsu. For Valley Public Radio, I'm David Alves. This is Valley Public Radio, FM 89, NPR for Central California, KVPR Fresno, and KPRX Bakersfield. Listen on your smart speaker, kvpr.org, and the KVPR app.